Award-winning journalists. New York Times bestsellers. No topic out of bounds. No opinions left unsaid. An institution for sports talk and information. This is The Sports Reporters. Here's Mike Lupica, Mitch Albom, and Bob Ryan.
I'm Mike Lupica of the New York Daily News and MLB.com.
I'm Mitch Albom of the Detroit Free Press.
And I'm Bob Ryan of the Boston Globe and ESPN. And we heartily welcome you to the Monday morning edition of the Sports Reporters podcast. We have been together in one form or another for going on 3 decades, and we are very pleased to be able to continue our relationship with both ourselves and with you in this format of the Times, and welcome once again. Gentlemen, there is a growing story. I don't see how... I would be not shocked if by the end of this particular 24-hour segment or even 12-hour segment, the official mandate word will come down. But as of now, there are scheduled to be an Olympics taking place on July 24th in Tokyo, Japan. It's crumbling, gentlemen. Canada has said it will not send athletes. Australia is saying, we don't understand how we can do this, and we're waiting for the big boys to do the right thing, which is USA and China and Russia, and tell them, hey, we're not coming. But it seems inevitable, doesn't it, guys?
Yeah, I was going to run this by Mitch, because I think out of all of us, Mitch, you've probably done the most Olympics, and then Bob and I might be. Bob might have me by some.
I got 11. I don't know how many you guys
got. I got a lot.
Okay, here's what I'm not trying to compare 9/11 with what's going on in the world right now. Okay, but it was, to me, that it was the biggest calamity before this, and that was 19 years ago. Okay. And the biggest sports event that got pushed back that year, they pushed the Ryder Cup back a year. Okay. And I'm not comparing the Ryder Cup to the Olympics, but they immediately made the decision that they could not play the Ryder Cup in the shadow of 9/11. And it's why they're on the rotation now that they're on. All I am saying is they have to come out this week and announced that they are simply going to alter the Olympic schedule, summer games, winter games, and that the summer games are going to be played in 2021.
Yeah, I think that that's a smart solution, and everything, all the other dominoes just go back a year. And quite frankly, the way that nations sometimes have to scramble to get venues and preparation together, everybody could use an extra year. The reason it hasn't happened up till now is probably in the following digit, $12.6 billion, as in that's what the budget is for this thing,
right?
$12.6 billion. And so people who do things that have $12.6 billion price tags don't move them quickly. And there's a little bit of Japanese pride, I think, going on here, and in the way that the Japanese government thinks that it has handled the coronavirus. But there's no way on God's green earth that these Olympics are taking place, or that anybody is going to go to them. And they'd be wise, Mike, as you suggest, to push them into next calendar year. Try to make Olympic Games in October. Just push everything back. Now, there's more to it than that. I mean, it's not as simple as, okay, we do that, because a lot of nations have already had their championships, where they determine who's going to the Olympic Games. They have to reschedule all of those. Those are frequently timed around the Olympics. And you have people who have basically have come back, in their careers and adding 4 more years of training just to get to these Olympics. And now we'll have to make it 5 more years and all the rest of it. But be that as it may, there's just no physical way on earth that they can hold these things. We're not going to be gathering in those kind of size crowds until probably next summer anyhow. So that's probably the best move.
It's 4 months, Mitch. That, you keep saying, well, I mean, we all keep thinking, well, it's July. Well, no, that's just, it's really kind of less than 4 months away now when they're supposed to start this thing up. There's just no way that they have any crystal ball that can tell us what the world is going to be like in 4 months. Now, again, you guys know I'm saying this, and this may sound like pie in the sky. We've seen how much bad news we can get in 2.5 weeks, okay? And I continue to believe that there will be good news to come along sometime in the next 2 months or 3 months, which is going to be a lifetime in the narrative of this story. but they can't put this thing on. And Mitch, I know that then if you push it back to 2021, then you don't want it to be 6 months away, or what is it, February, that they start the Winter Games. So you don't want to have it like be in September or something. They might move it up, you know, earlier in the summer. So they do have some separation between the Summer Games of 2021, which is what they ought to be, and then the Winter Games of 2022.
Why don't they just move the Winter Games to 2023?
Well, at some point,
I think they should just move it all, everything back a year. Everything's going to take that long to, you know, reset when the world resets with this thing. Why not push everything back?
And make them odd-numbered years now.
Yeah,
that makes perfect sense.
Where does it say this is because Baron de Coubertin started in 1896 rather than 1897 that we have to be on this particular cycle? That's all. There's no reason.
They did it. They did it in 88 or 92. Yeah. Whenever, I think it was 92. They decided, okay, we're going to start staggering them, and we're going to put. They had two Winter Olympics 2 years apart instead of 4 years
apart.
But
it wouldn't have made
any
difference
said,
if it was.
Nobody had an objection.
But it wouldn't have made any difference if it was 91 and 93 as opposed to 92 and 94, is all I'm saying.
Right.
There's nothing sacred about the round, the even number date. Right. Nothing.
But these are, Mitch and Bob, you know this. These are the most stubborn people in sports. Okay? We see stubborn leadership all the time. We in our combined experience, we see a lot of stubborn big guys, okay? But these are the most stubborn people, okay? And you know, the idea that they used to have to call Samaranch Mr. President. I mean, it was just insane. I used to call him the Joint Chiefs of Dandruff. I mean, come on.
The haughtiness. the eliteness, elite nature in their own minds. Oh, absolutely. You're right, Mike. This is a special group of pompous people, but yeah, they who govern an event that we, you know, I think, you know, millions and millions across the globe come to really like and appreciate. But
they really think that their thing is the biggest event in the world, and they've just been taught a lesson that there's other events in the world that are larger. And as stubborn as they are in thinking that we're bigger than this, first of all, you can't have a games when nobody comes. And you can't have a games where nobody qualifies because they can't hold the competitions that qualify people. You know, the track and field world championships, the swimming world championships, all the things that set the teams in motion, they're all canceled too. They're not taking place anywhere in the world. So how are you even going to determine who's going to be on your Olympic team? So there is no, all the infrastructure from this is already gone. The only people who don't know the Olympics are canceled are the Olympic Committee and the Prime Minister of Japan. And President Trump sent out a tweet, I think this was today. We will be guided by the wishes of Prime Minister Abe of Japan, a great friend of the United States and a man who has done a magnificent job on the Olympic venue as to attending the Olympic Games in Japan. He will make the proper decision! Exclamation point. In other words, that's one less thing that I have to do over here that makes me less popular. Let him go cancel the games, because they know full well that they're not going to take place. Trump knows full well they're not going to take place. And if for some idiotic reason they continue to say we're going to keep them on the schedule, then the president would actually have to step up and be presidential and say, well, we're not sending our Americans to that, nor are we having competitions
to determine. Oh, by the way, I want to correct myself, Mitch and Bob. It wasn't that they had to call Samaranch, Mr. President. No. I misremembered. He demanded that people call him Your Excellency. And guys, we remember what it was like when we did not send a team. You know, it's to these athletes. And again, there are bigger issues here, and we all know there are bigger issues. And no one would suggest that the Olympics are any more than one more thing, okay? One more piece of commerce in the modern world. But remember how devastating it was to those athletes, the United States, when we decided not to send anybody to Russia in 1980.
Well, it was devastating because the games went on and they weren't there. It wouldn't be devastating like that if they postponed these things a year. It would be hard on certain athletes who peaked and peaked their training and all the rest. But so what? I mean, the world is hard now, and you're going to have to change your ways around. Yeah. But you proposed, Mike, the most simple and logical suggestion: July 24th, 2021.
Yeah,
that's it. And move everything back a year, and stop worrying or even talking about this.
No, it's Mitch. Just as a practice, it's not a practical matter at this point. And again, baseball shutting down, it's a big deal. Hockey, basketball shutting down, all that stuff. The Masters maybe going to all of this is big stuff, but nothing compares to this as a global sports/political event. And they simply, there is no way that they can, all they're doing is kidding themselves and delaying the inevitable, which is pushing this thing back 1 year, or in this case, 16 months from now.
I'm going to predict that by the time we do the next Sports Reporter podcast, this will have been accomplished.
Yeah,
this will be a move. I'd like to ask, though, you mentioned a couple of the other sports, Mike, and I'd like to ask both of you guys something that I've been rolling around in my head. So my view on this, and I've said it for a while, and I do a radio program and write a column of non-sports, so I'm forced to have to talk to a lot of medical people and experts in the field, maybe more than the average person. My take on this is, first of all, we're not changing the way that we're living now under state lockdowns. In fact, my state is about to go into one of those lockdowns. Mike, I know yours already is.
Yep.
And New York is. And Bob, Massachusetts isn't yet, but
Rip Van Winkle, Rick DeSantis, who's the governor of Florida, comes out of his long spring nap, he's going to have to do the same thing here because there's still beaches open in Florida.
Well, right. So we're going to be living this way, in my view, at least 2 to 2.5 months longer, which takes us into almost June, pretty much June. If you believe the things you read, as things slowly begin to open in pockets, because they'll start declaring certain areas safe to, you know, do small gatherings and things like that, it's gonna unfold the way that it folded, you know, in reverse. And so the last things that are going to be allowed are going to be stadiums of 20,000 people, or God forbid, 50,000 people. That's the absolute end of the line thing that is going to be allowed in the United States of America. So seeing that, to me, you won't ever have a baseball game this season, unless it's in September maybe, that has any fans at it. You won't have any other summer sports that has any fans at it. So what is the reality, in your view, of just staging sports without fans for a long run? Could you do a 50 to 80 game baseball season without any fans? Do you think that they could pull that off? Could you have golf tournaments without any fans? Would the players be willing to do that kind of thing, you know, once the slumber, you know, starts to open up? Or are we looking at total shutdown until September?
I think they're going to play this year. I think
baseball, you mean?
Yeah. I think that and again, this may be pie in the sky, and you know, we know where sports fits into this, okay? And I think they might be playing baseball by June or July. That's me, okay? I have no medical expertise on this. But Mitch, in answer to your question, would they be willing to do this without crowds? I think 100%. They are desperate to get sports back up and running and to have television contact. They just are. Okay. They want to get the business going, and they know that, you know, I don't know what the breakdown is of what ticket sales versus the television money in these sports. I'm not smart enough to know that breakdown, but yes. And here's what I was thinking about this the other day, Mitch. I'm glad you brought this up. Can you imagine a scenario where they put, say, 10,000 people? I'm completely making this up here. In a 50,000 seat stadium, but that you can't, they separate them. Okay, you know what I'm saying? That they you see one fan here, four seats down. I know this sounds nuts, but to just get some people into the building, is that something you could see them doing?
Well, I have my thoughts, but Bob, I want to hear.
All I can say is, as you was proposing it, Mitch, that this would be the fulfillment of a joking fantasy that goes back 20 or 30 years. As television assumed its prominence in the commerce of sport as opposed to the paying customer. And it was indeed suggested or jokingly suggested over the years that all that was necessary was giant TV studios. That's all. These venues, giant TV studios that had nothing to do with fans. That actually was a joking suggestion.
And Bob, remember the game, the one game in Baltimore during the riots? Remember the game they played without fans?
It's only a couple years ago.
Yeah.
It's only a couple years ago, 2-3 years ago that happened in Baltimore. So I'm saying, but what I'm saying is actually jokingly suggested 20 and 30 years ago that, we just come to big TV studios. Ha ha ha.
My response to your suggestion, Mike, about the fans, that's untenable, 10,000, whatever, because they still have to go through the turnstiles and they still have to buy beer and all this. So you can say you have to sit here and you have to sit here and you have to sit here. It ain't going to work. There'll be no fans because that's endangering the general public. Personally, as you've been talking, I keep thinking of scenes, visual scenes of sports. The umpire screaming at the manager. You know how close those guys get to one another? You know how much spit gets exchanged between those two guys? If there was ever a petri dish
for
coronavirus.
So that's out. No, Mitch, that's out.
So can't do that, okay? And then how close they sit next to one another on a bench. Can't change that. I think of basketball, and when guys are sweating and they go to the free throw line and they wipe the sweat out of their eyes, push it away from their eyes because they don't want to drip into their eyes when they shoot. I mean, I see so many of these visual things that no matter, even if there can't be fans, but even if there aren't fans, the players would have to somehow sign off on some kind of thing that we are basically agreeing that we're putting ourselves into potential danger or potential spread here. They probably have to be quarantined other than the games themselves, because they can't keep going back to their families or back to their apartment buildings or whatever. I mean, it must be like an army team, that they stayed in barracks and they play. So the more you start to add that layer and add that layer, it's what makes me say that we're not going to see sports until September. And I know, Mike, you've always been a little more optimistic. I mean, I sure as hell hope you're right. I don't see any baseball in June. I don't see anything until September. Maybe there's a chance of some kind of a football season. But, all the progressions and all the maps show that until there is some kind of medicine or vaccine, just because we have a bunch of tests for it, which hopefully within a couple months we will actually maybe get caught up on having enough tests for people who need to be tested, that doesn't do anything to stop its spread. We're already doing what they would tell you to do if they found all those more cases with more tests, is staying at home and staying away from people. So I don't see that changing. And if that doesn't change, who's going to volunteer? What sport's going to volunteer to say, we'll take our chances. We're okay with this. Mm-hmm. Which leads me to one other question. Now, I read this in a column. I've read other things that are contrary to it. But apparently, in at least the NBA, there is a codicil in the contracts that they have with the players' union. And I have to imagine that this is the same in other sports, called force majeure, which is a French word for end of the frickin' world, and when something like that, an act of nature happens, earthquakes, hurricanes, that can't, but they don't have to pay the players.
Yeah.
Well, at what point does that start to become an issue for these owners?
It's going to be an issue because Mitch, I know for a fact, Tony Clark wants the baseball players to be paid. I do not know if they have a force majeure codicil in the collective bargaining agreement in Major League Baseball. This is a very interesting conversation because let me expand it this way. Do you think they should get paid?
Well, no, not at the kind of prices that they're getting without the return product of the playoffs, which is where they bring in all that massive money. There are an awful lot of people, and I'm looking out my window and I can name in my neighborhood, who aren't getting paid now. an awful lot of businesses that don't have business and so therefore can't make any money and are going to be out of business. So why would athletes continue to be the exception to that rule? Only because their owners somehow decide that that's the case. But if the owners have an out and the owners are looking at, okay, for real, we're not having any playoffs this year, which is what they're still hanging on to, a thread of hope in the NBA, and I don't know if the NHL is kidding itself that way too. If they realize that and they don't get any of that TV revenue, no, I could see them saying, hey guys, you know, we may be billionaires, but we're paying out, you know, $300 million in annual salaries, and we're not going to do that if we're not bringing in the revenue.
Yeah, I can see that be the case. I can, in a better world, they maybe, talk about fantasy. In a better world, they would, you know, figure out some kind of situation where they could pay something in a fair, balanced way, you know, so that the superstars wouldn't be getting their commensurate share. They'd be getting the same money as the bench warmers. Ha ha ha. They could figure out something like that, I suppose. But I know that's.
And I'll tell you something else. You do not want to be on the wrong side of a fight over money at this point in this world with everything that's going on, especially
like the owners of the Boston Bruins, who were the last people in the NHL to do any, to say anything about taking care of the temporary workers. Basically we're drag kicking and screaming into this thing and still doing it half-ass. I mean, you wouldn't want to be in there.
No.
That's their place in history now. That's the way they're going to be remembered forever and ever and ever.
But not paying your janitorial staff and your seat people and all the rest evokes a different sympathy than saying, you know what, we're not going to pay LeBron James the second half of his salary.
Right.
Well, nobody's going to care about that.
There'll be a lot of people who are going to feel sorry for that.
And nobody's going to feel sorry
for
that.
Let me just,
that's what I'm saying. Nobody cares about that.
And again, before we continue our conversation, I want to remind everybody that we are, once again, today sponsored by GEICO. Okay, this is a 30-second commercial, and I'm going to throw a lot of numbers at you, but please stay with me, because if it doesn't confuse me, it's not going to confuse you. In just 15 minutes, you could save 15% or more on car insurance. This company has been offering great rates and great service for over 75 years. And anytime you need help, you can speak to one of their trained specialists 24/7. The company, of course, is GEICO. Go to geico.com today. Sorry for all the numbers. And in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Oh, damn it, I'm out of time. Guys, there's going to be a list when this is over. The owners in sports who are taking care of the arena workers and the ones who still, Bob, speaking to what you just said, who aren't. Okay, and I think by and large, the leagues have been pretty good about this, right?
And yes, by and large. But this is a despicable outlying circumstance here in Boston. So. Yes, by and large. And let's salute the very first player who stepped up, Kevin Love. He's going to get down in history.
100,000, yeah.
He's going to get down in history. Like Hank Greenberg, who signed up. Like Hank Greenberg, who went down to the enlistment to enlist on December 8th, 1941. He's always going to be remembered for that. And Kevin Love's going to be remembered for being the first athlete to step up with money.
Well, there are acts of generosity like that going on all across the country on bigger and smaller levels that you don't hear as much about because they're not athletes. But like, as I said, you're not going to get a lot of sympathy from people who are going to face the worst economic crisis, certainly since 2008. And if it keeps going, maybe 1930, because athletes aren't getting paid for games they're not playing. So we'll see on that.
I got a question. I have a sports. Sports question for you, Mr. Album. As we move up on an event that will be treated like the biggest sports event in the history of the planet, the NFL draft. Okay, because man, oh man, I don't know what ESPN would be doing without the NFL draft to talk about 37 hours a day. Mitch, what are your Lions? And I know that the Lions were a little unlucky because one or two would have been a lot better than three this year. And I keep thinking of Knicks fans who know that Don Nelson grabbed Steph Curry one pick before they were going to pick him and might have altered the franchise like the Knicks. What are the Lions going to do with the number three pick in the NFL draft?
Well, you're so right about that one spot. And believe me,
the
hand-wringing here over why couldn't the Lions have lost one more game?
Is that all it would have taken? Is it just one more
game?
Mitch?
Yeah. One more game. Half a game. They tied. Half a game. If they had
tied the Cardinals, right?
They tied in the opening. If they had just lost that game, they could have the number two pick. Their biggest need is a defensive lineman. Chase Young is sitting right there. He may be a generational talent at that position. And you say, hey, all the rest of the teams in the country and in the league, you go worry about your trades. And we're sitting right where we want to be because number one's going to be a quarterback, and we're going to take Chase Young. But no, they had to tie that game. And so now they're number three. And number three puts them in a position of they don't get Chase Young because he'll go to Washington or somebody will trade for him up at that spot. And now number three, the best player, technically, although nobody has seen him and is not going to see him, is Tua out of Alabama. And Tua is half damaged goods, but if you believe his agent and his medical team, he's back to back. He's back to healthy. And he is very arguably the best player at the most important position in the draft at that moment. However, they have Matthew Stafford for at least three more years on a $30 million a year contract. He's been pretty darn good. They don't really need another quarterback, except normally you say, but you don't want to pass on a guy like that. Oh, and let me sprinkle in one more little piece of intrigue and then ask you two, what would you do if you were the Lions? The coach, Matt Patricia, and Bob Quinn, his GM, both New England imports, have been told by Martha Ford, who owns the team, you got to win this year. This is your last year. If you don't get us, you know, to the playoffs or make some kind of huge progress, you're done. So do you take a rookie quarterback when you have a starting quarterback to just sit on the bench who is not going to make much difference for you in winning any games this year when you have to win your games? Or do you trade the pick away and try to get a bunch of defensive players that you need to help out, in which case, you know, their track record on picking the right players ain't so good? Or do you just curl into a ball and yell, mama, mama, because this is a terrible situation? What would you do?
Okay, here's the other. The kid, the linebacker from Clemson, Isaiah Simmons, he's a pretty damn good player. He's not, I don't think he's Chase Young, okay? But when you lay it out like that, Mitch, I don't think they can take Tua. I do not think they can take Tua and say, Martha, listen, we're hearing you. We're feeling you, Martha, okay? But this kid's too good to pass up, but he's going to need time. I don't think they have that luxury. And now I'm seeing, by the way, I'm seeing mock drafts now where the Lions do take Simmons because they do need a defensive player. And then the Giants trade down with the Chargers, and the Chargers take Tua before the Dolphins take Justin Herbert.
Isn't that cute? I'm going to weigh in at the answer based on the way you framed it, Mitch. I would opt for the trade the pick, and if I'm those two guys and I'm fighting for my life, it's pretty much an easy call.
But Bob, you trade the pick, and Tua becomes the next Lamar Jackson, and 2 years from now, Matt Stafford's career is over, an injury or something like that, and you're watching other teams with the next Lamar Jackson, and you're saying we could have had that guy.
Yeah, I understand, but you just framed it that they're fighting for their life and they got a better
chance. I'm talking about the fans and the franchise.
Still in Charybdis, you know, this is a tough call. There's no question. But, you know, sometimes these sure things aren't sure things. I remember thinking when in the Reggie Bush draft, and I was the only one who was thinking, you can't pass on Michael Jordan. Remember that, Reggie Bush?
Yeah.
You can't pass on Michael Jordan. Just can't. Well, Reggie Bush turned out to be a decent NFL player, but, yeah, he's not going
Played
to – he's
Lions.
Not. He's paying to get in. He's paying to get into Canton. He's never, you know, he's going to have to pay to get in.
Oh, yeah.
And so it didn't happen. He didn't become Michael Jordan.
Right.
So, yeah, you know, and Tua,
Jeff Okuda, by the way, is probably more likely the guy they'll take just because
of the positions they need.
They need a cornerback. They traded Darius Slay. They need help in the defensive backfield. And they won't get killed if they take him because he's supposed to be a great player. But It's just that thinking about, man, Matt Stafford had an injury last year. He missed, for the first time in his career, he missed half a season. It's a back injury. Will it recur? Is it going to be one of those things that, you know, you're always going to have to worry about? Do you pass on a generational quarterback? You know, passing on a generational running back in Reggie Bush, passing on a generational defensive talent is not the same as passing on a generational quarterback. We know that. I mean, you know, look at all the teams that wish they could have drafted Lamar Jackson now. Look at all the teams that wish they could have drafted Tom Brady, you know, and they had many chances to do it. So there's no regret like quarterback regret. And that's the haunting thing. I think if Martha Ford said to them, hey, look, I'm changing my mind. This guy, too, is that great. We should have him under wraps. Take him. Let him sit for a year and learn. Figure out what to do with Matt Stafford a year from now. Or trade him to some team or whatever when the kid's ready to go. But if he's going to take care of us for the next 10 years, take him. And I remove my edict that you have to win this year. But, you know, I don't know that she's going to do that. But if you're forward thinking, I think a lot of franchises would do it that
way. Whoa, whoa, whoa. This is the Lions. Don't get into that forward thinking crap, Mitch. Okay. All right, listen.
You just discovered the forward pass.
Okay, I have a question, and but before we get to it, I gotta tell you about our new friends from Butcher Box. Okay, if you're like us, you love meat, but not just any meat. We're talking high quality. So finding 100% grass-fed, finished beef, free-range organic chicken, heritage breed pork, or wild-caught salmon at the grocery store can be, well, tough. Not to mention, if you do find it, you'll pay a fortune. Well, welcome to ButcherBox. We love this service that ButcherBox provides at the Sports Reporters. Every month, ButcherBox delivers a curated selection of high-quality meat right to our homes. We pick what we want. It is awesome. That is one less trip to the grocery store and a better, more affordable selection of quality meat. It's so easy. And by the way, again, it's not just meat. My favorite, and it's hard to pick a favorite here because this stuff is really good, is chicken. In fact, Taylor Lupica has even let me prepare it either on the grill or in the oven. It is great. Each box has 9 to 11 pounds of the highest quality meat around for just $6 a meal. Wait, did you catch me there? $6 a meal. Plus, we can customize our box or go with one of theirs. Either way, we get exactly what we want. It's a no-brainer. Right now, ButcherBox is offering new members ground beef for life. Tyler Brewer, our producer, is just so excited. He's like, he's got to lie down. That's 2 pounds of ground beef in every box for the life of your subscription, plus $20 off the first box. Just go to butcherbox.com/reporters or enter promo code Reporters at checkout. That's butcherbox.com/reporters or enter the promo code reporters at checkout. Okay. You ready?
Yep.
You're a GM. You have a quarterback need. Are you convinced that Tua is going to be okay?
Today?
No. I'm just saying, you know, we're not far from them putting him on television and say, hey, Tua, do some one-handed push-ups, okay? Show everybody how good, you know, do some jumping jacks. But are you sure that after what was, remember when it was compared to a Bo Jackson-like hip injury? Are you convinced that you want to move heaven and earth or, despite he had the fact that he had a sketchy senior season, is Justin Herbert the safer pick?
It's a highly abnormal situation, but the thing is, it is a year when there are other, right, you mentioned an alternative in Justin Herbert, who a lot of the pros think is
fits tremendous. The profile.
Fits the profile. You know, it's you flip a coin and hope it, you know, hope it comes up right for you. It's shaky. It's not a lock. It's a gamble. It is a gamble. Whoever does it, it will be a gamble. No, period. It is
a big gamble, and here's why. I mean, college football isn't pro football, and Alabama scares me because they have such an incredible team year after year that it is really hard to judge who is the best player on that team. Who's making the team win. You know, their receivers get so far open because they're playing against inferior coverage, that a quarterback hits him in stride and everyone goes, wow, look at that quarterback throw that perfect pass. But the receiver is also way more open than the receivers are going to be in the NFL. Their linemen are so good that they open these massive holes. I mean, we've all watched Alabama games, whether it's the running back or the quarterback. There are times where they burst into the secondary. They haven't been touched yet. And it makes for exciting highlight films, but it's really difficult to see how does that translate. Question, you know, how many quarterbacks have come out from under Nick Saban and are stars in the NFL? Well, made the NFL, but are stars in the NFL. You know, so you add that to his injury, and I understand why GMs would be hesitant to say, I don't know if you bet the farm on this. This is why the Lions are in such a terrible position. Because, you know, if they actually went ahead and took him for the future and he turned out to be an okay quarterback, you know, they would have passed on the defense that they needed, probably going to lose for another few more years at the very least. But don't you find that, you know, that's a tough thing to judge with quarterback, particularly from teams like Alabama?
Oh, yeah. Oh, no. And the amazing thing is, and we talk about this all the time, that the next moment is the one that changes everything in sports. And it's not like the injury that finally sat him down wasn't the only injury he's had. That's the other thing, okay? He'd had other issues before. But when he came off the bench and threw that pass to win the national championship, it was like a college football movie, okay? The kid from Hawaii goes, he benches Jalen Hurts, Saban does. He brings this kid in, and when it's all up against them, he throws that pass when it was like, what was it, third and forever, when he threw the touchdown pass to win the game the championship game. We would have thought you would just been counting the days till he was eligible for the NFL draft. But now you have to say there is a huge question mark here. And let me just ask one more other question about Tua. Say Tua hadn't gotten hurt. Okay. And this is barroom conversation. Do you like him better at his best or Burrow better at his best?
I like Tua for the NFL. Because I think that skill set and his movement, his speed, the things that he can do on the run, although Burrow's not bad at that either, work better if he's totally healthy and perfect and all the rest of it. But you know, that's not the case. So you're in a fantasy land here. And by the way, Mike, I'm watching the play as you just described it. Okay.
When Tua got, you mean when he got,
I'm just watching it.
The play to win the championship?
The guy, the receiver number six, I'm watching it on my computer, is so wide open. He is 4 feet, 5 feet from the nearest defender. It ain't going to happen in the NFL that way. So, yeah, it was a perfect pass to a wide open receiver between two defenders because that's what happens in college. But even that moment that won the national championship is a college moment, but not a pro moment. And that's what scares me.
It's a gamble. We know that. And somebody, you're going to get lucky or unlucky. And that's been the case.
He's the intriguing figure, though. Do you not believe
he is?
The intriguing figure in the draft.
He's the wild card.
Right?
Total wild card in this draft. Total wild card in this draft. He changes everything. Where he goes and what people do to get him will be the thing that spins the whole draft and will be ESPN's topic of conversation between now and April, whenever the damn thing is, because it's the single biggest unknown, and drafts love unknowns because they provide excitement. We all know who's going first, but we don't know who's going second. Although I read a story about a possible Miami they trade all their first round picks to get Burrow, you know, that was interesting too. So who knows, you know?
Well, when you look at this draft, okay, here's what I want to know. Just from the Detroit perspective, Mitch, do you get the sense, and I know that you've got other things to talk about these days on your radio show, do you get the sense that Lions fans, they don't care about Quinn and they don't care about Patricia. They just want to win. How much sentiment is there for them to make the sexy pick and go for Tua?
Well, there's a lot because it's always popular to get a new quarterback. you know, especially when you haven't won with your current one. So Matthew Stafford has a lot of fans here, but he's got a fair amount of I think, ill-informed detractors who you know, see this back injury. I know Matthew fairly well. I talk to him on my program every week. So this back injury was not one of those things like, it's chronic, it's the rest of your life, you're never going to be the same. It's totally healed. But the people who don't believe that think that he's damaged goods. Get rid of him, trade him. They thought they should have traded him back to New England, since all they do is trade with New England. You know, they pick up New England's cast-offs, they make trades with New England. They thought they should have traded him to New England to take Tom Brady's place and get something in return, draft picks or whatever, and then go with Tua and, you know, do the development thing for a year and let him become a. So there's a pocket. I wouldn't say it's 50%, but I'd say it's a good solid 25%. Who clearly want to make that move, but that, you know, that's what happens, Mike and Bob. Everybody wants the next new quarterback. Everybody wants the next new thing, you know. And then when they get out, they're never as shiny and bright as they seem as they were on draft day. Meanwhile, I want to ask our friend Bob Ryan here, but a question about Tom Brady. Mm-hmm. But before we do that, we've got to thank our good friends at Geico. Everybody's got a to-do list. Drop off the dry cleaning, pick up some milk. Here's an idea. Let's add save hundreds of dollars on car insurance. And the good thing is you don't have to drop off or pick up anything. All you have to do is go to geico.com. And in 15 minutes, you could be saving 15% or more on car insurance. You got extra money in your pocket? It just may be the most rewarding to-do that you do today. Okay, so Bob, there was this huge story on ESPN.com that went way into depth about Tom Brady and why he and Belichick split. Mike, you read it. We were talking about it before the show. And it really kind of, it was almost like Marriage Story, you know? It was just like watching something dissolve, the threads unravel gradually until he was just fed up. Tom Brady was just fed up with Bill Belichick. And basically, this was not a decision, if you believe this piece, that was as much about, wow, I can win better in Tampa, or in fact, I can win better anywhere else, then I've got to get away from Bill Belichick. I've had it. That's it. Last straw. Money, personality. I don't want to be here anymore. Is that the general sentiment in Boston?
Well, it certainly it's hard to ascertain what the general sentiment is, and because things, except to say, people are now becoming more and more aware that is a complicated story, that it is not just a matter of there is a good guy and a bad guy, there is an innocent victim and there is a villain. First of all, it's a three-pronged story with the owner, the player, and the coach. What we are, it is very analogous to a divorce. It is exactly what it is. It is definitely a divorce and between those two. And with Kraft, you know, as factoring in on overall everything, but the fact is that those two have been heading for this. And you know, how many times have we said, you go back to the Garoppolo trade, which Bill Belichick clearly did not. I haven't read the story yet. I just put it up. I'm sorry. I wish I read it before we started, that particular story. But Bill Belichick did not want to make that trade. And he did it in haste, and he did it for 70 cents or at best on the dollar because he thought he had found the kid and he was ready to cut the cord with Brady even then. That's A. And then Brady, of course, in the famous interview with Jim Gray about we respected him and appreciated him, and he said, I plead the fifth and blah, blah, blah. So from that, this first, we headed to where we are now. But it is like a divorce. And we're now learning that Brady interviewed Tampa more than Tampa interviewed him. And that's another funny part of it.
What do you mean?
The story is now that the in Tampa that Brady, when they talk, Brady asked them far more questions about Tampa's operation and everything. That it was as if he was interviewing them, not first, you know, of course, not vice versa. And he was interviewing them to make sure this is a place where he actually did want to go. But he definitely wanted to go there. Specifically after he, you know, heard what he wanted to hear from them, or what he needed to hear from them, I should say. But yes, it is a divorce. And
Mike, what did you take from that piece?
Here's what I take, Mitch. And I think that we are talking about two of the most obsessively competitive people in the history of the sport. The greatest quarterback of all time and the greatest coach of all time. And I think each of them is now obsessed was showing that he can win without the other. Because you remember way back in the day, how many times was it Montana? Was it more Montana or was it more Bill Walsh? Okay. And is it the quarterback? Is it, what would Brady have, what would Peyton have done if he got to play for Bill? All that stuff. Okay. But to me, this boils down to, as I read these stories, and again, all of this stuff that's in that story, we've kind of talked about, we've intuited as we've watched the Brady drama play out. Mitch, I just believe Belichick is obsessed, if not winning the Super Bowl, going back to the playoffs without Tom Brady. And Tom Brady is obsessed with taking the Tampa Bay Bucks at the age of 43 back to the NFL playoffs.
Well, what I find fascinating about this is, as we all know from marriages and friendships and business relationships, it frequently, in those type of things that start to go south, it only takes a very small thing at the end to tip it over, because it's been building and building and building and building. And then, you know, people end up getting divorced over who took the car keys, not because that's what's at the root of the issue, but that was just the last straw thing that pushed it over. So if this was, as the piece claims, sort of a last straw thing, that the fact that they didn't want to give him a long contract, you have Kraft quoted in this story as saying, "I thought Tom Brady was coming over to iron out the deals of our contract." You know, and he was, as he always does, just come over, okay, let's get this thing done, which was a revelation to me. I didn't know that Brady just drove over to Kraft's house and figured out his contract, but that's the way Kraft made it sound. But he, at least if you believe his quote, talked about being surprised when Brady came over there and told him, "No, I'm leaving." And so what that makes me think is, how amazing was it that they came within a dropped Julian Edelman pass of beating Tennessee? You know, they wasn't like they were awful this year, and we're coming off a Super Bowl win. They did all that when apparently these two guys were inches away from that divorce.
And Mitch, that says Mitch, a lot. One other thing. Well, that is a great point. And here's the other thing, okay? If they do win that game, who's to say they couldn't have done to the Ravens what the Titans did the next week?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, the Ravens were more about not being up for the moment and Lamar Jackson not being ready for that. And my goodness, why wouldn't that be the case in a championship game against New England? If he kind of, you know, unraveled and came unnerved a little bit in a game against Tennessee. Now, granted, Tennessee's defense is better than New England's. But, yeah, anything could have happened. And they could end, and then they end up in a Super Bowl again. Okay, even if they lose the Super
Bowl.
Doesn't
matter. You're right.
100%. Doesn't matter, right?
Nope. You're right, Mitch. Mitch, you're right. Again, one play changes the course of it. Imagine, think about that. I mean, Mitch is making a great point. Say they do beat Tennessee. Mm-hmm. Say they do go back to the Super Bowl, even if they end up losing. Okay? And you know, who knows what would happen.
Let's back up to one thing that is you just can't take for granted. You have to understand it's the crux of everything. Tom Brady's desire to keep playing. Tom Brady stated desire years ago to go to his 45. Tom Brady played. And what occurred to me in the aftermath of the Garoppolo thing is that what Tom Brady is doing in Belichick's mind is messing up the whole plan by being as good as he was at this point. And right. I think Belichick didn't count on him being as good as he was at 39, 40, et cetera, as he was. And I was saying at the time, I was always joking, he's messing up the whole plan by being this good. And you know, so this insane desire to play though he's 45 it's just such a strange element in this story. That's all.
Hey, Mitch, do you think that Bill Belichick is looking, I know this sounds nuts, okay, is looking at Jarrett Stidham and seeing the second coming of Jimmy Garoppolo? That,
well,
they just
signed Brian Hoyer, so they're all set now. You know,
because, they got Hoyer and Stidham. Hoyer and Stidham.
I mean, they're locked.
Mitch,
I wouldn't even bother getting another quarterback.
The law firm of Hoyer and Stidham. If you have been injured in the workplace, there's a number you can call to get Hoyer
partner.
Or
They have Cody Kessler. So
they got Cody Kessler.
Sounds
Kessler,
good.
That's Stidham, a nice and Hoyer.
Yeah,
that
there it is.
Too.
That's a good.
Yeah. It's a good law firm.
And by the way, to wrap this up for today, guys, how surprised will you be if the Patriots make some kind of pre-draft or even draft night move to get a quarterback?
Well, never surprised at anything. No. It just, the one surprise thing would be moving up. He's usually more considered moving down. But not Michael this year? No. They do have two first-round picks, by the way, later in the draft, and they might choose that to take a quarterback. But would it surprise me? No, of course not.
I'm sure that's what the brain trust mantra here.
Not that he's infallible, and God knows in certain ways, but you know, you figure he's got a plan, right? Do we assume that he has a plan in his head? Yeah, I think.
Well, the problem with the plan, but the problem with the plan in the draft is that your plan has to intersect with 31 other plans, and that's not so easy to do. But if an opportunity presents itself, will they strike? Yeah, you know, my guess is that Belichick right now and his staff, his brain trust, are combing through every piece of film for the best quarterback you can pick with the 20-whatever pick that they have out there, and seeing if there's a diamond in the rough there, or seeing if there's a diamond in the rough at 20, you know, that they could trade their two picks and move up to that kind of thing. And there may well be. I mean, if you go through Tua and Herbert and Burrow, you know, that's three quarterbacks right there. Nobody else is, you don't hear a whole lot about a lot of other quarterbacks, and most of the teams that are going to be trying for them are going to have, you know, made their play for them already. So it's quite possible look, if you could take Brady at 199, then you can find somebody at 27, 8, 9, 30 or whatever. It's just, who is that person out there? But Mike, you're wrapping up. I'm wrapping up this way. I looked at, you know, to look at the scores of the Tennessee-New England game, I just flipped up on my screen the playoff run last year. And I realize, when you look at the fact that Tennessee's probably only going to get better, Baltimore is clearly not going to make the mistake. Because remember, they were everybody's favorite pick until they got shellacked by Tennessee. And Kansas City, you got to go through those three teams to get to a Super Bowl. And then you flip it over to the other side, and there's Green Bay, who's aging. Minnesota, who's, you know, to me is beatable. San Francisco, which may have had its best season last year. We've all talked about the hangovers from Super Bowls. New Orleans with an aging quarterback. Those are the real formidable teams that you got to get through, unless you consider Seattle one of them. But which would you rather have to try to run through of those sides, right? And I'm sure Brady looked at that and said, get me out of the AFC.
100%, Mitch. It's as good a way to end as any. I think that absolutely factored into his thinking. I think he looked at those results that we talked about the other day. I think I'm right about this. 7 losses by a touchdown or less for the Tampa Bay Bucks. He's not seeing any superheroes on that side. He's certainly not seeing Patrick Mahomes. It might not be any more complicated than what you just said, Mitch. Get me the hell away from Lamar Jackson and Patrick Mahomes.
All right, well, then we're going to get the hell out of here, but we'll be back on Thursday and see if my prediction of the Olympics being suspended, postponed, rescheduled, whatever happens by then. If you like what you heard, please leave us a comment. If you didn't, leave us a comment. If you would care to leave us a rating, we always appreciate that. And tell your friends that if they miss the sports reporters, as we constantly hear back in the days when we were going outside, hey, I missed the sports reporters. Well, tell them they can get it on Stitcher or Spotify or Apple or Pandora or any of the popular platforms for podcasts. We do this every Monday and Thursday, and so we'll be back in just a couple of days. Until then, on behalf of Bob Ryan and Mike Lupica, this is Mitch Albom asking you to stay safe, stay sanitized, and see you on Thursday.